Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of The Group Chat. I am Virgin Media News correspondent Richard Chambers, and like government ministers, we are scattered to the four winds this week. Zara King has only somehow just made it back from LA and the Oscars. Zara, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm exhausted. How are you?
We're going to talk a little bit about why you're exhausted, because it is a hell of a story. But living his best life on the grounds of Howard University in Washington, D.C. Gavin Riley, political correspondent, how is all?
Call me Pitbull because I am Mr. Worldwide. I'm very well. How's everyone?
Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 305, when he steps up in the room. Everything is good. Zara, kick us off. What's the story with your travel?
I mean, I just feel like everything that could have gone wrong just completely went wrong on the journey back from LA. It took us 48 hours to get home. I only got home in the last hour. We left LA... We left the hotel at like midday on Tuesday, and what is it now? Like, it's Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon.
I don't even understand how it happened. Like, so basically, it started with a 3-hour delay from our flight, and that meant we missed our connecting flight back to Dublin. And then there was a rearrangement of another flight, but then the second flight that they arranged was an Aer Lingus flight going from Terminal 2 at Heathrow, and we landed into Terminal 5. So Mark and I basically got into Terminal 5, and all the luggage was like, not after coming through off our original flight for like an hour and a half. And long story short, I'm like pedaling across to Terminal 2 with the camera, which weighs 20 kgs, by the way, across to Terminal. It was like very heavy, actually, incidentally. Fair play to Mark, who's been carrying that all week. Ran across to Terminal 2, like had a bit of a cry at the Aer Lingus desk when she told me the flight was closed last night, to then discover that British Airways had put on another flight back to Dublin at 9:15. To which I'd have to get back to Terminal 5 to get that. So then trekked back over to Terminal 5 to find out that that flight had closed as well. So basically, Mark and I missed 3 connecting flights to Dublin yesterday, not because of our own fault. Now, to be fair, normally I would suspect it would be my own fault, but actually just because of the delay, it just totally screwed us up. So we ended up in an airport hotel in Heathrow last night, and we got a flight back this morning. It's just been a nightmare. But even down to like small things, like when I got into the hotel last night, you know, you just can't wait to have a shower because you're just like, I'm so gross from traveling for all of this time. And then I get out of the shower and the hair dryer in the room wasn't working. It's just
for love
like,
of God.
Honestly, you know when you're just like, really? Really? Like everything has just been a bit of a... And then today I've just discovered that I arrived into the office here to realise that we're all recording remotely. So I'm delighted that I came in for this.
I am incredibly sorry that happened. That was one of those things where you see it happen in the WhatsApp group and you're like, we are powerless to stop this, but it is.
I saw the link coming through and I presumed it was for Gavin because he's in Washington. And then I was like, no, that's actually for all of us. But anyway, so we're here. Anyway, look, it was a great week. But we're going to crash. I was just saying, though, I think I might have actually managed to cheat the jet lag. Or maybe I'm being too cocky now.
I think you're not in a position to say whether or not you've beaten jet lag having just arrived. I hope you have. I think that would be only appropriate at this point if you do get some you know, freedom from jet lag. But I think you're only going to figure that out over the next couple of days. We'll come back. I want to ask you a couple of things about the Oscars before too long. But Gavin, since you're our man abroad this week, and it is that time of the year again, St. Patrick's Day, the Shamrock Ceremony, all that sort of good stuff. It is worth mentioning that, you know, the last couple of Irish Taoiseach to go over to Washington, there's been a touch of drama with both of those. Has there been anything happening yet so far?
Yeah, and no drama so far, no travel calamities for anyone involved at all. The closest that there's been to a calamity was that the event that we were at last night, one of the guest speakers of honour was Chuck Schumer, who is the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, so like one of the most powerful people in the US. And he gave a speech in which he thanked Ireland and other NATO partners, as if to imply that Ireland was a member of NATO, and very triumphantly announced that he was after getting a US Navy destroyer named after an Irish citizen. To which kind of fell flat for a lot of the room because we were like, we're militarily neutral, we don't think that's a great thing. And he thanked Seamus Heaney for his award on the apparent understanding that Seamus Heaney was both in the room and alive. Neither of which were correct.
Oh, God.
So that's the closest that we've come to any kind of calamity so far. It was mentioned last night at that gig. So we were at the Ireland Funds dinner, and the Ireland Funds dinner has become this kind of this awkward banana skin of lore, because the last time that any Taoiseach was there at all, of course, was Micheál Martin this time last year. And it was at that event where he was whisked away from sitting beside Nancy Pelosi to be told that he had just tested positive for COVID and that he would need to go into lockdown in Blair House, just across the street from the White House. So that was at the Ireland Funds dinner last year. And the previous time that a Taoiseach had made it to the Ireland Funds dinner in person was 2020, when Leo Varadkar was once again whisked away to be told that, as was documented very well in Richard's book, that the advice had just come through from Tony Houlihan and Simon Harris that night that COVID had basically hit the country hard and that we were going to have to take the decision to close schools and to curb mass gatherings. So it's not an event which is held in very fond memories.
It's kind of cursed at the moment, Gav, I would say, yeah.
Like the only, yeah, just a bit.
The only cursed aspect of it seemed to be, I don't know if you mentioned it, the Chuck Schumer bit where he said that if the Irish rugby team was sent over to Ukraine, it would be sorted out within weeks, which was perhaps one of the most tasteless and also stupid things I've ever heard a politician
utter. Yeah, unfortunate thing to say.
And that was apparently, that gag was justified on the premise that the Irish know all about trying to stave off invaders, which, you know, considering that the audience included not just political luminaries from the Republic, but also the leaders of all five of the major parties in Northern Ireland, two of whom are unionist, and at a time when the Irish government is trying to sort of smooth everything over and try to get power sharing between unionists and nationalists back up and running, it was a slightly crass thing, I think, to come out with. But just as a kind of an illustration, though, of how template-y some of these speeches can be. Joe Kennedy, who's the new US envoy to Northern Ireland, spoke, and he spoke very well. Kevin McCarthy, who's now the Republican Speaker of the House, so again, another one of the most powerful people in Washington, he was there and he spoke very well. Chuck Schumer gave this speech in which he did the usual thing that every American politician has said for the last 3 years, which is that America won't countenance anything that amends the Northern Ireland Protocol. And then 3 seconds later called for universal endorsement of the Windsor Framework, which, not to get too technical, but which itself substantially amends the Northern Ireland Protocol. Yeah. So it was a little bit of a jigsaw of speeches where he was taking lines from remarks that he's probably given 100 times over the last 3 years and didn't really cop that some of what he was saying was just materially wrong.
Very outdated,
or that some of what he was saying wasn't well geared for the audience that he was speaking to. But no, thankfully the Taoiseach got out without any COVID diagnosis. So
that is a positive. We'll take that. We'll take that for now. But there is an element, Gav, and I suppose you get it from the Schumer bit there. Some people were pointing to other things said by American politicians last night as well, and as a bit cringe and stuff like that. But if you go back even a few years, there is an element of, is it that people forget that, you know, people can see them and hear them when they're at these things? Because do you remember, obviously, Leo previously went over and visited Donald Trump in the Oval Office and in Washington. And you remember there was that exchange about planning permission for the wind farm and stuff like that. Like, there is a propensity for faux pas and fudges and gaffes at these things, for something which is so stage managed and is such a, like, a centre point of the St. Patrick's celebrations. They do tend to go wrong quite often, or at least, you know, they have these little foibles in them.
They do, and I think sometimes it actually goes a little bit beyond Patrick's Day stuff. Like, there definitely used to be a propensity, particularly when Enda Kenny was Taoiseach, there was always a chance that as soon as he was off Irish soil, that some of his political radar would just go slightly askew and that he would start to say some things on the basis that they wouldn't be heard by an Irish audience, despite being followed by the Irish media corps and all that stuff being reported back. I mean, in Chuck Schumer's case, you could probably make a fairly clear argument that he wasn't really speaking to an Irish audience or didn't think that his remarks about, you know, sending James Lowe and Josh Van Der Fleer into Ukraine would sort out the Azov battalion once and for all. Like, I don't think that was really where he was going. But that definitely, when Leo Varadkar is making a speech on Capitol Hill and he's like, you know, by the way, Donald, this isn't the first time you and I have spoken. I remember you ringing me when you were trying to get planning permission for Doon Beg. And lo and behold, it happened.
Sorry.
Wasn't that convenient?
Even when you remind me of that, it's just so, I can't actually, what was that?
It was a remarkably silly moment.
What was that?
Like, over time, I think as Taoiseach warm into the role, they become a little more aware of how everything they said will be picked up and rebroadcast to an audience back at home. Like, when Leo Varadkar had that gaffe about this suggestion that he had managed to, like, manipulate planning permission in Trump's favour, that was Leo Varadkar's first visit as a Taoiseach. And there might have been a certain sense of being very wide-eyed and wet behind the ears, and that maybe he could be forgiven to a point for saying something that was a little bit silly. But then again, he is the Taoiseach, so he needs to like, watch his words a bit more carefully.
Was that before or after the Love Actually comment in Downing Street?
That was after the Love Actually comment, because Leo Varadkar got elected in summer of 2017, and the Love Actually comment was, I think, that summer, because I was there with him in Downing Street, where he made that line, and all of us being like, wow, like, did you really think that they'd filmed Love Island or Love Actually in Downing Street? You don't think that was done on a film set somewhere? But then, yeah, so then the Trump remark was the following March. So he'd already been in office for 9 months, and you'd think that he would have learned to be a little less loose-lipped. But there you go. But like, it's a really busy programme for the Taoiseach. Now, we often just think of the visit as being a little bit of glad handling or a meeting in the Oval Office. But one thing that's remarkable when you're here, and I'm lucky enough now to say this is my sixth time following various Taoiseach to Washington for Patrick's Day. And one thing which you really learn when you cover it so many times is that every year more stuff gets added to the programme, which then becomes an immovable and indispensable part of the programme. So that, you know, we think of it as being, oh, it's just a meeting in the White House with the President, and that's the whole thing. But actually, like, there's so many more other aspects to the trip now, which are annual fixtures. To the point where, genuinely, if it keeps growing at this rate, at some point you could just shut down Leinster House and conduct all of Irish politics from Washington, because it just so many other elements are here. Like, there's now an annual presentation of a medal from the Science Foundation to leading members of the Irish American community for scientific endeavour. Like, the chief technological officer of Accenture was one of the winners this year for working on like groundbreaking AI stuff. There's networking stuff, there's cultural stuff, there's like tourism stuff. He gives an annual speech to the Chamber of Commerce, which is like a pretty big deal because they don't tend to have very many foreign visitors. Like, there are so many extra aspects to all of this that, like, it is a cliche, but we don't appreciate how good we have it with the level of access and the doors that are opened for Ireland on weeks like this. Like, it is absolutely nuts. And it is often said that other countries would kill for this kind of level of access or the amount of you know, open doors that are there for you this week. But like, we would be nuts to ever think about letting this go, because just the sheer volume of stuff that happens, or the doors that are open for the Taoiseach, or the stuff that gets done. And then like all the rest of the civil society sector, like I bumped into the General Secretary of Force at the country's biggest trade union, bumped into him yesterday, because he's now over, because it's nearly become this week where it's not even just for the Taoiseach, where all of Washington basically opens up to all of Ireland. So the head of Force was having a meeting with his counterpart from America's biggest trade union, the AFL-CIO, yesterday. It's just this mad open door where this red carpet is rolled out for anyone who's got an Irish accent and an Irish surname. And the amount of influence that you can wield just from this tradition having grown more and more legs, like, is actually mind-blowing. And like, it is definitely a cliche, but it's definitely true that we are absolutely the envy of so many other countries in the world, because just the amount of stuff that you can get done on a week like this if you play your cards right is just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a very unique opportunity, definitely. Sorry, Richard, go ahead.
The thing I was going to say is that while you were away, like, while Gav is touting, you know, the value and the exposure that Ireland gets in Washington, we also had the confirmation of that, you know, that worst kept secret that Joe Biden is actually coming our way next month. So, I mean, we've all covered presidential visits to this country before in various guises. We don't have the firm details yet, do we, Gavin, about exactly Joe Biden's itinerary. It'll involve Belfast, Dublin, and perhaps some other spots along the way. But
you'd have to imagine Mayo would be somewhere on that list, wouldn't you?
You would.
If you were guessing.
If you were guessing, and without wanting to get people's hopes up to then dash them if it doesn't come true, Ballina would be very much strongly on the radar, obviously. But there will be something different, I think, not to be like to make too fine of a point of it or to come across as a bit forelock tuggy. But Joe Biden is by far the most Irish president there ever has been. You can keep your Kennedys and all that sort of stuff. Kennedy pretended not to be Irish up until he was president. Like, Joe Biden has literally does not shut up about Ireland, and that's not in an insulting way saying that, but it's going to be a huge, huge element. So I think that's going to be interesting to watch, Gavin, as the Shamrock Bowl thing goes ahead. Is that, you know, it's all coming back our way within the space of a month.
Yeah, and one thing which would be interesting then to see when we do have the Shamrock presentation and the sit-down of the Oval Office is whether Biden at that point divulges some more details of where he's intending to go. Will he drop by Ballinasloe? You presume he will. Will he try to get to the Cooley Peninsula and go and see his Louth relatives, including like Rob and Dave Kearney, the Ireland rugby players, and how much will he be able to fit in? There is an expectation that he'll be in Belfast for a few days in the middle of April. Queen's University are doing a big program of Good Friday Agreement commemorations from the weekend, I think, that starts the 16th of April for 2 or 3 days. You'd expect Biden to be around for a bit of that. And then the question is, how much time can he justify spending on one island? Like, can he justify doing 2 or 3 days in Belfast and a couple of days in Dublin and maybe a day in Mayo and maybe a day in Louth as well? So it's a case of how do you try and fit in as much into a fairly compact schedule. One thing which is kind of interesting, though, just to take a kind of a sideways step for a second, the Americans, not only do they love having the Taoiseach over, but they always love having the leaders of the Northern Ireland parties as well, because America's record of getting involved in the affairs of other countries in the last 50 years is not a very very glowing one, and there are very few instances of America deciding to have a go or to get involved in other places and for it all to work out. And Northern Ireland is one of the few things, basically, since the end of the World War and maybe Korea, where things have ended in something that America would say, yes, this is success. So America really likes to hold up Northern Ireland as this example of like some of the nation building and peace bringing that America can be responsible for when it all goes right. Mm. So one thing which would be fascinating then when Biden comes is if the institutions created by Good Friday, you know, having a standalone government basically and a standalone parliament in Northern Ireland, if they're not running at the time that Biden comes, which will all depend on the stance of the DUP in the coming weeks, it might be a very kind of a gloomy affair that he'll be coming over and doing his whole family thing and visiting the old sod and talking about how his grandparents said not alone keep the faith, Joey, but spread it. Like, he'll be doing all of his forelock tugging, but some of the victory lap stuff that you might expect from 25 years of the Good Friday Agreement could be a bit downbeat if he's coming over to mark the achievements of an agreement at a time when that agreement isn't really working and all the stuff really that working. Is envisaged isn't up and running.
And Gab, you mentioned there Rob Kearney. I saw he was at the event last night as well. He's very close to the Bidens. He seems to be back and forth quite a good bit.
Yeah, so we expect him to be at the Shamrock reception on Friday evening. Rob Kearney, of course, an occasional rugby pundit with Virgin Media Television as well. Keep it all in the house. We think he's a second cousin or a third cousin of the Bidens, because he's able to trace his Joe Biden, not alone his roots back to Mayo and to the Blewett family, but he's also got links to Cooley, and that's where his links to the Kearneys come in. As we all might remember, Joe Biden allowed a video message to be filmed last summer after Ireland won a series in New Zealand against the All Blacks for the first time ever, and was filmed sending a message of congratulations to the team via the involvement of the Kearneys, which was a quite surreal and unexpected moment. So we will be no doubt throwing questions at the Oval Office to see what Joe Biden has planned for Saturday afternoon Washington time, to see whether he's going to be sitting down to watch the Grand Slam decider live on Virgin Media One from the Aviva Stadium. Joe Biden, as being a somewhat unorthodox celebrity superfan of the Ireland rugby team, is one of the many unexpected aspects of foreign policy in the 21st century.
And Richard, when we talk about these presidential visits and we look at, obviously we can't predict, we said already, the schedule, it kind of goes back to what Gavin's saying about even just the Paddy's Day stuff. Like, it's a huge opportunity, isn't it, for Ireland to kind of be platformed again next month, like just ahead of the summer, like even just from the whole tourism perspective, to have those shots beamed back across to America of Ireland. It's a huge opportunity for the country again next month, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I mean, they say that. I mean, I've never seen anything really definitively show that there's a link between, like, you know, if Joe Biden went to the Cooley Peninsula or to Ballinasloe, that we'd have thousands of tourists decided I want to go where Joe Biden is from, especially because he's a divisive enough president. Maybe that's the thing, but maybe it's all about the scenery and stuff like that. It's not necessarily to do with I suppose him, it's just the exposure anyway. But tourism numbers from the States had been up in the run before the pandemic, so I know people in Tourism Ireland are hoping to get a nice little push out of it. But one thing actually, Zara, while we have you on, and you're just back from the States yourself, Tourism Ireland, we're looking for a little bit of a spin out of obviously Banshees of Inisherin, which obviously didn't have its night really at the Oscars. being there for Oscar night, what was the buzz like? I mean, lift the curtain here for us. Give us every grubby detail that you can remember from the night itself.
Especially the grubby ones.
The grubby ones. I mean, it was good. I mean, it was very, very busy. It basically kind of started very early in the afternoon. I mean, the red carpet kind of starts from about 3 o'clock onwards. So it was a really busy afternoon.
By the way, just while you mentioned the red carpet, because it wasn't a red carpet this year, it was champagne. It looked like that old carpet in the house that we used to rent that it would get very mucky like.
I was just going to say, I feel like we've had a carpet like that in the house that we used to live in. I think it's like your mom's cream carpet from the good room. Like, do you know what I mean? It was kind of that sort of energy. Actually, I got to touch a piece of the carpet because I met this lady called Vivian who describes herself as the Oscars super fan. And she gets given a piece of the carpet every year and she basically sews it into this denim jacket that she has. So she has this jacket with like pieces of the carpet from like every year for the last, I don't know, 10 or 20 years or whatever. So they gave her a piece of the cream carpet, but she wasn't a bit impressed. She was kind of like, yes. She was like, we had a piece with her on the news actually.
I did see some of the red carpet reporters who were like lamenting how grubby it was getting, because when you have like, you know, thousands of people traipsing past and they're not all wearing brand new box fresh footwear, that it was getting pretty grubby very quickly.
And even in some of the photos you kind of see that. I mean, I think there was some people who kind of felt that maybe for photography reasons it would be better, you know, for lighting, even if you've that lighter colour underneath, that it kind of does, let's be honest, it does give the skin a bit of a glow and it is a bit nicer. But I don't know, I think there's something old Hollywood glamour about a red carpet. I wonder will they go back to red next year. Champagne cream is really now, I think anyway, to the naked eye it was a cream carpet, but they kept the curtains behind it then were red, but actually apparently the curtains are normally cream and the carpets are red. Anyway, I digress on the carpet, but that was that was certainly a big talking point on the night. Yeah, so I suppose that the ceremony is obviously, it goes on for quite some time. Obviously, you're watching very closely to see how Ireland was going to fare in it. Like, I mean, we talked about this last week. I don't think there was any upsets or any surprises, really, in terms of the results of the Oscars. Everything Ever All at Once literally won Everything Everywhere All at Once, which we all kind of knew was going to happen. Richie Baynum, though, what a legend. Richie Baynum is honestly such a character. Like, he is... And you know what? He's so cool about the whole thing. I find it's so endearing. Like
he's the man who won for Avatar, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So the visual effects, Best Visual Effects Award for Avatar Way of Water. This is his second Oscar. And he's also won a BAFTA. So we went down
to the...
The interview
you did with him, Zara, sorry to interrupt you, when you spoke to him for Ireland AM on Monday morning, I think from the side of Sunset Boulevard, there was a man who was living his best life. Like, he was just so happy with the world.
Well, you know how I got that interview, right? So I went down to... So there's all these after parties, sorry, after the Oscars, which is really where you kind of mainly get people, you know? So you have to decide which after party you're going to go to. It's kind of a roll of the dice because you don't know where people are going to turn up. It's like the Vanity Fair party is obviously the big after party. And like, obviously a couple of the journalists, we've been chatting to each other. So our colleague, Henry McKean in News Talk, I've been on to Henry and we were kind of going, which one will we go to? And Henry said he was going to go down to Vanity Fair. So I said, look, I'll go to the other one. This other one was kind of the after party for like the On Colleen Kuhn cast. And we thought that Richie Baynum would probably go to that as well. So we kind of rolled the dice on it. And look, we just got lucky that Richie was actually there. And I just walked in and like looked around the room for the person who was holding the Oscar. No word of a lie. And I just walked up to him and I was like, hi, I'm Zara from Virgin Media. I was like, would you chat to me for like 5 minutes outside? And he went, no bother. He just came outside. And his wife was like, where are you? And I was like, do you want to come as well? She was like, sure. So the both of them were just so sound. So brought them outside the after party across the road, and Mark was waiting with camera and we just did the interview. But like, just so nice. But you know what was lovely actually? He was saying that like he has this big mantra about kind of, you know, can't see, can't be and stuff. And like Richie Baynum really feels like for young Irish people to know that this is attainable, like that this is possible, that they have to be able to see it. But like, he doesn't mean just see it as in like watch it on TV. Like, he has kind of said, look, he's happy for his Oscar to do like a tour of Ireland and have like kids in schools get to see it and like, you know, get their picture with it or touch it and like, you know, and understand that like this is achievable. He doesn't think that things like Oscars or BAFTAs, you know, should necessarily be kept locked away in a glass cabinet, that actually he sees the importance of kind of giving children an opportunity to see it, which I think is like such a lovely mantra,
a really nice idea.
Isn't it? Like, it's such. And I was saying to him, would you have time to do the school tour? And he's like, no, but he's like, I'll send it back with my dad and we'll make sure it gets around.
One question that I want to ask you, Zara, because I have to bail in a couple of minutes because we're just waiting for Leo Varadkar to do a little kind of press conference with us here. Did Richie Baynum let you hold the Oscar after you'd spoken to him on Sunset Boulevard?
I didn't actually ask him could I hold it, but I'd say he would have had no problem whatsoever. I didn't ask him.
Shame.
I should have probably asked him could I hold
selfie
it.
Selfie opportunity.
I mean,
missed.
Not I honestly think he wouldn't have minded at all, though. Like, he's just so nice about it. So, no, he was really good. And obviously the cast of An Irish Goodbye as well, like, how gorgeous. They were just so delighted as well. So, like, both of those were really our best chance of winning Oscars, and they did win them in the end. So, it was a busy night, but it was great. I did really enjoy it. I have to say, it was a good one.
Did you bump into anybody else? Anybody else? Anybody international that you bumped into or were in the orbit of?
In the orbit of anyone else international? Not really, to be honest. No. Sorry.
Oh, well. Next time, Zara. There's always next time.
Was there any sense, briefly, Zara, just before I go, was there any sense of disappointment that Banshees didn't manage to win anything? Or will Ireland still feel like it was a worthwhile week? You know, when you're talking about 14 nominees, they might have thought they could have come away with slightly more than two. So was there any sense of it being bittersweet from that front?
No, not at all, actually, Gav, which is really funny. Not at all. I think actually the real feeling is that this is the beginning of something really special for Ireland, that we're on the cusp of this great kind of moment in film, and actually that the nominations, particularly for the individuals like Barry Keoghan and obviously Colin Farrell and everyone and Kerry Condon, that actually the nominations are really just a huge honour, and that it's just kind of a step further in their careers. So no, I don't think there was disappointment at all, actually. I mean, obviously it would have been nice for them to win, but like, I think ultimately people are still very much hanging on the fact that it's massive for Ireland to have had the 14 nominations in the first place. Like, 25% of all actors nominated at the Oscars this year were Irish. Like, it's unbelievable.
Massive. And one of them, Barry, today I was reading reports that he's now starring opposite Paul Mescal in the Gladiator 2 film, which sounds like must see from the get-go. Gav, you have to run there.
Yeah, I have to run. I'm going to let you guys go. Hope I get to see you guys in person again next week, but I will send Leo Varadkar and the good people of Howard University all of your regards.
Bye, Gav.
Godspeed, Gav.
See you later.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, Zara, today the big news in the world of Irish entertainment and show business is that Ryan Tubridy is to step away at the end of this series from hosting The Late Late Show.
I know.
Are you surprised to hear this?
I actually was really surprised to hear this. So I didn't get the news until I came off that flight from Heathrow. I turned my phone back on again, so I was about 40 minutes behind the curve by the time I got it. I was really surprised, Richard, because I actually think that, well, certainly a lot of people would have said that the Late Late Show gig was kind of a lifer's gig, that you did it for a really long time and that, you kind of did it up to retirement. So I didn't see it coming. I didn't really think that he'd step down after 14 years. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I'm surprised at the timing of it. From what I know from people in Montrose and that, there wasn't a feeling that he was imminently going to leave. So I was kind of surprised that it came when it did. I was sitting actually in the barber's when I got the push notification. Mm. And I was like, whoa, did not expect that today. So as you say, it's a lifer's gig, really. There's only been three full-time hosts of The Late Late Show, the longest standing institution in Irish broadcasting, really. And his is coming to an end. Obviously, there will be speculation about who follows. And bookmakers have already released odds. Miriam O'Callaghan said to be the favourite. Brendan O'Connor, Tommy Tiernan, Claire Byrne, who I do know internally, is a strong favourite. Jennifer Zamparelli, Ray Darcy, Dahi O'Shea, Sarah McInerney, Graham Norton and Dara O'Brien. Neither of those last two are going to...
I know. Would you wonder? I don't know if Graham Norton would probably leave the gig he has to come back home to do that. But
not in a million years. Not in a million years.
No, it's a great lineup there. Personally, Claire Byrne sounds like a great shout for that job. I think she'd be absolutely brilliant at it. It's funny though. I mean, I'll enjoy the speculation that will continue over the next couple of weeks, and those who will rule themselves out of it.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the best thing to look forward to. Do you want to throw your hat in the ring now?
What about yourself? I wouldn't think I'd be on their list now. So no, I don't think that's going to be a runner for me. How about yourself?
No, well, it hasn't ruled out people, you know, having their names floated for things before who are never going to get the job. so we'll leave it wide open.
Come here, I was going to say, though, I have to say, leaving The Late Late Show, which, let's be honest, is the biggest gig in television broadcasting in Ireland, you must have something else fairly big in mind, potentially, to say that you would leave a role like this.
Zara, we're going for it. We're going to go to the theory. The group chat has privately had a theory for quite some time that Ryan Tufrady is could run for the Oras.
Yeah.
And could run to be the next president of Ireland. Now, obviously, this has happened. You know, it isn't unusual for television personalities to be floated as potential Irish presidents. Miriam O'Callaghan, of course, previously was linked, was running for president. You know, she didn't rule out that she would do it in the future. Kind of probably, I'd say that, you know, she never really dismissed it any time it really came up. Obviously, we had, you know, the Dragon's Den guys who ran that last time fairly infamously as well. But we have a feeling. Ryan Tufrady is a big fan of presidential politics. I mean, he's written the book on Kennedy. He's very open in his, you know, his admiration for, you know, the American president and big political head on him. He reads a lot of political books. I feel he has it in him.
Yeah, no, so do I.
To at least consider running for the Oras. So what's your take on it?
Oh, yeah, no, totally. I mean, look, obviously, privately, we've spoken about this before. Like, I mean, I think that this, and by the way, sorry, we have nothing to tell us. There's no insider information, to suggest that Ryan Tufrady is running for president.
Mischief making and theorizing.
This is just us. Yeah. This is just us sort of guessing and maybe speculating and having guessed it a few times. And so the reason, what made me think of it really was more that I suppose Ryan Tufrady has been in many ways great at positioning himself as the voice of the nation on a lot of big issues, particularly over the last couple of years in those difficult times. Ryan Tufrady has been somebody who has been very good, even on his radio program, I suppose, in capturing how people are feeling and, you know, sort of verbalizing or echoing sentiments that perhaps like people felt. So even just that alone had a sort of a presidential touch to it, I often thought. There were times where things would happen and I'd think, it's quite presidential the way he's handled that. And I thought to myself, I wonder would he ever have any ambitions that way. So, I mean, look, again, we don't have anything to suggest that that's actually going to happen.
I really wish Gav was on this. Gav has strong views on this as well.
I know, he does.
Real pity. He can join us next week to tell us about them. But yeah.
But I do think that it's not beyond the realms of possibility, I have to say.
I think if you were, you know, a presenter of The Late Late Show for many years, 14 years to be exact, and you had a very long career and a long life ahead of you still. And like you'd have heard other characters pegged for, you know, potential Oras runs like Miriam or whoever else. It would definitely at least cross your mind. It would only be natural that it would cross your mind at some point thinking, could I do that? Could I run for the Oras?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, listen. And also, given what we know about who potentially is in the field for the next Oras race, could be Ryan Tufrady versus Bertie Ahern versus Gerry Adams. That would be the greatest of all bun fights. I would be there for that.
Now, it should be said that he is going to stay on and do his radio programme on RT Radio 1. Dee Forbes was speaking today on radio, so she was saying he is going to continue on doing the radio programme. So he's not completely leaving broadcasting. And also there was talk that he might work on other television projects as well. But look, like I say, Late Late Show, definitely the biggest gig in telly, let's be honest, you know, in terms of that big kind of, you know, entertainment sort of chat show programming. So exciting to see what he will do next. Will it be a run for the Oras? Look, we'll have to watch this face and see what happens.
We've put that out there now, and we are responsible if he becomes president, for better or for worse. I think Ryan Tufrady is probably his legacy. I think might be on in terms of, you know, the Late Late Show. I think it'll probably be the toy show and the way that he spun the toy show. Was very different to the way that Gabo or that Pat did the toy show. And I think that's probably a strength of his that I think is probably going to be, that'll be a tough job now for the next person to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Like everybody has their own style, their own spin on things. But I think Tufrady's toy shows, really over the last few years. They've gone up and up and up and up in terms of the spectacular element. I think that's going to be, that's a tough legacy to beat. And to be fair to Ryan Tuberty, always very kind to us anytime,
yeah.
You know, shouting out the odd time or whatever like that as well. So look,
totally.
Obviously, but I'd say not an easy decision on his behalf to step away from the gig. But obviously, as you say, he's sticking around in radio. And perhaps, maybe, just maybe, there's something else on the horizon for him as well.
If he's listening now, he's going to be cursing all of us and say, he'll be like, what are you talking about, lads? But no, I mean, I think just to echo what you said about the toy show, because remember during lockdown, remember when Ryan Tuberty had COVID at the time and he came back to work and he was saying that he'd had letters even from kids all over the country that were like really worried that there would be no toy show because he'd been sick and everything. So that kind of just speaks to sort of how popular he is in that role, in that toy show role, that, you know, kids all over the country, you know, really like sort of admire him and look up to him, which is a big, like, big position and big shoes to fill, certainly.
Yeah, I wonder now, because obviously there's a season to finish off here. Like, there's always been big send-off guests on the Late Late Show. Like, do you remember when, obviously, when Gay Byrne stepped away, there was the whole Harley Davidson thing with Bono and the lads from U2. Pat, I think Pat Kenny got a guitar from U2, I think, as well.
Did he? Oh my
gosh. Pretty sure he did.
Wow.
There's definitely a lot of gifting going on, but there's always a big, big send-off once they get to it. So I'd say that's something on the horizon as well now for a little bit later on this year. But yeah, so we'll wait and see what happens in terms of, I think they said there's an announcement later on this summer, perhaps, in terms of who might actually take on the Late Late Show. But a lot of road to be passed between now and then, I think, anyway.
Who do you, so I obviously mentioned there, I think Claire Byrne would be brilliant at it. Who do you fancy out of the lineup? I mean, I think Claire or Miriam, either of them would be great.
I think Claire Byrne, to me, is my instinct on it.
Yeah.
I think she'd be great. Tommy Tiernan has his own thing, which I think is working well for him. I think it's a different kind of show.
I think Tommy Tiernan's thing, yeah, I agree. It's totally different, isn't it? And it kind of works where it is at the moment as well. I think to move it would nearly be kind of, you know, the wrong thing to do. I think it works where it is. Claire Byrne is excellent. And I mean, anyone who listens to her, I'm a big fan of her radio programme. I have to say, I listen to her regularly. I think she's brilliant.
Yeah, she's a superstar. This isn't like to denigrate any of the other names we listed there in the favourites list. All incredibly talented broadcasters in their own right. So yeah, we'll wait and see. That's always, look, there's nothing better than a good big media gig speculation and the runners and writers of it. I actually was only listening to an audiobook there last month about when Johnny Carson, who is the presenter of The Tonight Show in the US for many, many years, much like Gay Byrne was for The Late Late Show, when he was being replaced, and there was like a bitter war between Jay Leno, who eventually got the job, and David Letterman. It was one of the best things I listened to in a long time. So there's a book recommendation there. But I don't think it'll be as vicious in the RTE horse race to succeed Ryan Tuberty. at least we all hope not, anyway. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one as things go on.
Yeah, send us on your suggestions who you think it might be. We'd love to hear from you.
Zara, good point here as we come to a close then. I suppose St. Patrick's Day, it is a big news day in many ways. People will tune in traditionally, watch the evening news and see what the parades are like across the country. Yeah. Do you have any particular memories of having covered those?
Oh, I mean, like, listen, there's like getting assigned to like three parades in one day. Happened to
class.
Sort of like
love
go
it.
And do one, pack up the car, run to the next one. I do remember when I started in television first, and I was what's known as a video journalist, which is basically when you're the cameraman and the journalist all in one go, you film everything yourself. And I videoed the Waterford parade one year, like completely by myself. Like, you can never be a video journalist at a Paddy's Day parade. It's an absolute disaster case. But yeah, I mean, I have to say, I like working Paddy's Day. I always think it's a good one. I always think the Paddy's Day program is great because it's just, honestly, it's a real chance to get like so many faces from like the smallest towns and villages up and down the country on national television, which is always brilliant. And people always come with their A game, and the parades are always full of, you know, sort of bright colours and great talent. So yeah, no, I love working. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've loved it. I've done the Dublin Parade for Virgin a couple of times. And yeah, I think that's one of the ones I've covered. I'm a big fan of regional parades, though. I mean, you talk about the colour and what's going to be seen. Anybody watching now over the course of the weekend, and you have a chance over Twitter or Facebook or TikTok, you will see on the streets of Rush in North Dublin, you'll see a familiar figure in the guise of Big Bird on a quad bike pulling wheelies. It has become the strangest Irish tradition, or St. Patrick's Day tradition. He is basically the mascot of our town. And he will quad bike wheelie his way into your heart that. Over the course of this weekend. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It's one of my favourite things as well, just about St. Patrick's weekend in terms of news, is, and we all do it, and I think it's almost a, there's almost an enjoyment out of doing it. The amount of cliches in it are just to be, they're just to be loved. Like, even you'll hear a news announcer saying, like, you know, there was even an appearance from the man himself as a man dressed as St. Patrick. Strides down the street.
It was all too much for one little fellow, and there's always a shot of a child asleep in a buggy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of that journal speak. It is a great day though, so I hope everybody wherever you are does enjoy St. Patrick's Day and the weekend as a whole, and Mother's Day of course on the tail end of it. But it promises to be a good one. Zara, before your jet lag does set in, we should probably let you get home. Because you know it's been a wild one.
It's been a wild one, but it's been nice. We've enjoyed it, and thanks so much to Mark Armstrong, my cameraman. He's been brilliant, and you know we've had a good long 9 days together, but we've had a great time. And look, it's been lovely. So I think maybe next week get back into some kind of normal routine again, and enjoy the bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, and next week I think we will all be back in studio in the same place for the first time in a couple of weeks, which is much to be looked forward to. So Zara, thank you so much again. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.